never one day handed me a cigarette and said, "It's okay." I said, "Devil wanna be a rock star, play my music in the real fine bars." It out.
Welcome to the Devils in the Details radio show live on SkidRowStudios.com. Here's your hosts, Wine Russell and Nestor Rodriguez.
All right, welcome to the Devils in the Details radio show. My name is Wyme Russell, and I thank you very much for joining us on this beautiful Friday here in downtown Los Angeles. Of course, listening to the show today live on SkidRowStudios.com. I appreciate that. And for coming back again for another week of truth interesting information. My co-host is back, so check this out. We got Nestor in the house. He is back from back east. His journeys abroad. The multi-talented Nestor Rodriguez.
Back from back east.
How we doing, man?
I'm good.
Good to see you.
Good to see you. Good to be back here on the Devils in the Details.
How do you like the weather out here compared to back east?
I love the weather in Los Angeles.
Beautiful day today, right?
Yeah, it's always a beautiful day here.
It is. It has been cold and rainy, but today we are blessed with a beautiful day for the show.
Yeah, what's a trip here is that there appears to be a 30-degree difference at times, wow, which is here, which is kind of crazy, you know what I mean?
That is true.
It's like 65, and sometimes it goes down to 35. That's a little ill.
It is up and down. But today, Nestor, we have a very interesting show. It is a disturbing yet informative show. Today we discuss the most notorious religious cults. And I know we've been kind of going over the information. And
yeah.
It is quite quite disturbing.
Yeah.
What is your thoughts on the religious cults out there?
Well, I was hoping we were going to discuss Santeria, but that's not one of the topics.
Not today.
It's crazy. I mean, what do you want me to say? It's wackadubious.
Right. Well, today, the cult members... of the cults that we're talking about today, display an intense fellowship and devotion to their leader. And this devotion in every case today resulted in the deaths, not only of the members, but of the leaders as well. So these are the cults where many people have actually died in the, membership of being in the cult. So this is very interesting information. The lesson learned today would be to determine if we could be susceptible to the same type of thought reform and re-education that these cult members fall victim to. Sometimes we might fall victim to that and not even know it. So it's very interesting to believe that we could possibly be susceptible to it as well. What do you think, Nestor? Do you think you might be a person who could be susceptible to joining a cult?
Myself, I've thought about joining Scientology a couple of times.
Wow. Okay.
So I'm always looking for an alternative way of looking at things. You know what I mean?
Right.
So could I be susceptible? I think anybody could be susceptible to it. You know what I mean?
Well, I agree with you. And we'll kind of go through a little bit of that today. But you can always call into the show, please. Call and share your thoughts, 818-893-9562. We'd love to talk to you and get your impressions on being brainwashed or being mind controlled.
Mind forked.
Definitely. And that is what we will be concentrating on today, is how people are manipulated by these people and end up, in this case, dead.
Yeah. So, by the way, I was joking. I have not considered joining Scientology.
Oh, okay. Well, I thought you were serious.
No. All jokes. All right. Although I have found them, even though we're not discussing that particular conspiracy or whatever today, I have found them very, very interesting. And I have done enough, a lot of research on them.
Right.
I find them fascinating.
Okay. All right. Well, that's fair. Today, you know what? We're going through three cults today. We're going through Heaven's Gate, the Jim Jones People's Temple cult, and we'll be going through the David Koresh incident with the Branch Davidians.
Waco, Texas.
They're all quite different situations, but they all end up the same way in the deaths of the followers.
A lot of people don't remember about the Heaven's Gate.
Right. Well, that's where we're going to start.
Yeah.
So let's just go ahead and start. So Heaven's Gate was a religion-based cult in San Diego, California, founded in the early 70s and led by this very bizarre individual, in my opinion, named Marshall Applewhite.
He's bizarre.
He's definitely bizarre. Him and Bonnie Nettles created this this religious group. On March 26, 1997, the police discovered the bodies of 39 members of the group Heaven's Gate who had committed suicide in order to reach what they believed was an alien spacecraft following the Hale-Bopp comet.
Right.
So they thought that, you know, something was behind it and they were going to kill themselves and, and join it. And that at the time, Hale-Bopp was close to Earth, so it was kind of in the news.
Right, right.
The suicides occurred over a three-day period, 15 occurring the first day, 15 occurring the second day, and 9 occurring on the third day, including Applewhite.
Oh, interesting.
So that is strange.
I thought it was all in one shot.
Yeah, very strange.
Yeah.
Suicides were committed by taking sleeping pills mixed with applesauce, then chased by vodka. Once they had fallen asleep, a bag was placed over their heads and they suffocated to death.
Right.
So I think they all kind of assisted each other in the,
yes,
the beginning
definitely,
stages.
Definitely.
Or potentially put the bags over their own head, but it makes more sense.
Well, Applegate was found peacefully resting with a shroud over his face.
They all were, yeah. They were all the same exact.
Oh, they were, okay. So, but I think they were all assisted. I mean, each one of them assisted the other on some, yeah.
Sure.
That's what I think.
And they were found and videotaped in death by a former follower who was not part of the suicide pact. Applewhite informed him what day to arrive. So he gave him information. This one person who was no longer in the cult told him when to come, what door to open, you know, how to actually videotape it, and, you know, not to disturb
that
anything.
That video, I believe, is on YouTube, yeah?
It is. And it's horrific. And if you look at it, but it, you know what? That it actually did the service of what it was what it was meant to do. So Applewhite wanted that video to display to the world how they all went back to you know, this kingdom level,
right? The higher, get their souls to the higher form, to you know, closer to God,
right? Applewhite believed he was a messenger equal to Jesus from the kingdom of God, so he put himself right on the level of God or Jesus. The kingdom level above, and he claims it was the kingdom level above human. That was his whole thing.
Right.
He believed that God planted souls into various human beings for specific missions and purposes, and these were the people that he was to find and use to further teach his messages. So these were the people that would come to him and follow, you know, which is very strange. These were the people, obviously, that followed his message, and his message was the end of an age message. So Applewhite's message was quite apocalyptic,
right.
They were a doomsday cult,
which is why when Hale-Bopp was coming close to the Earth, he saw it as a sign to this is a sign from God that we need to climb aboard this and take us out into outer space.
Right, he made the decision to do that. In believing that he was this messenger of God and that this was the end of an age. Or an apocalyptic event in you know, human history, he believed that the Earth would be wiped clean or refurbished or rejuvenated. I have a few clips of Mr. Applewhite. I'm going to go ahead and play them. He would use the words recycled or spaded under as what's going to happen to humanity. So let's just listen to Applewhite's own words.
We'll title this tape Planet Earth About to Be Recycled. Your only chance to evacuate is to leave with us. Planet Earth about to be recycled. Your only chance to survive or evacuate is to leave with us.
So he's telling them, you know, it's time to go, you know, only time to leave. So he believed the only people that would survive this spading under or this refurbishment were the people who found a guide like himself to teach them how to travel out of the apocalypse and into this kingdom level above human.
Right.
So here's Applewhite again.
You know, intelligent human beings should realize that everything has their cycle. They have their season. They have their beginning. They have their end. They have cycles. We're not saying that planet Earth is coming to an end. We're saying that planet Earth is about to be refurbished, spaded under, and have another chance to serve as a garden for another human civilization.
So what he's essentially saying is that the end of the world is coming, My God, an alien being, is telling me that the only way we can survive is by killing ourselves and joining God in a spacecraft.
But he's also saying that the Earth is not going to end,
right,
but that a new set of humans are going to come. I think he was talking about the Republican National Convention.
But you know what? He might have been.
Yeah.
He was talking about something very strange.
By the way, you have to Google this guy, go to YouTube. The guy is a freak. He looks what does he look like? What was that guy from Lost in Space, Mr. Smith, Dr. Smith?
That's exactly
Dr.
right.
Dr. Smith, right?
He does. I think he might have been trying to look like that guy.
Yeah. It's bizarre. It's bizarre.
You got to see.
And they called him Doe. All his followers called them Doe.
That's right. He defines an alien as his God. So this alien, he actually, you know, has pictures of an alien, and this is his God.
Mm-hmm.
And he states that we are the creations and creatures of an alien God. So one more time for Mr. Applewhite, or we have a few others, but let's listen to Applewhite again in his own words describe this information.
I, in all honesty, must acknowledge my father. My father is not a human father. My father is a member of the evolutionary level above human, the kingdom of God, the kingdom of heaven. My father gave me, long before this civilization, gave me birth into that kingdom level above human, that kingdom of heaven, that kingdom of God.
So Marshall Applewhite started Heaven's Gate with a woman named Bonnie Nettles. So him and Bonnie called herself T, and Applewhite called himself Doe.
Right.
So it was...
And she died. She died first.
She died of cancer in 1985, and that set up his whole theology.
Yes.
And that Applewhite claimed that she, in death, was in fact God incarnate.
Right.
And she was the one who would go out, get the spaceship, and return behind the Hale-Bopp Comet. And that was who they were going to join, was their God.
And then there was even a false attempt to jump on some sort of a spaceship prior to that. And he had all his followers waiting. And this, of course, this through the night. And of course, the spaceship never showed up. And the next day he told them that it was actually both of them, because they were still alive. She was still alive at the time.
Wow.
They both told their followers that was just a test to see if...
Amazing.
It's amazing.
It is. It's unbelievable how the people can just, you know, be so in tune with it or manipulated by it. But... So Applewhite and his followers would rejoin her by committing suicide, obviously, going up to this spaceship and then traveling through this kingdom level above human. So let's hear from Applewhite again.
Now, the only time we have an opportunity to leave the human kingdom and go to the kingdom level above human is when there is a member from that kingdom level incarnate in human form, taking that body and saying to you, I'll tell you about a kingdom level beyond here, and if you want to go there, then you have to follow me, because I'm the guy who's got the key at the moment. Whatever representative is sent from that kingdom level and comes into the human kingdom, then that's the representative that has that key to that kingdom for that period of time.
Crazy. You guys, out of his mind.
But I mean, seriously,
he's crazy.
He's got the key.
Right.
To that kingdom.
Only him.
I mean, he's not even quoting any like official scriptures. He's just making this bullshit up.
It's a complete version of some sort of
But it's out of control.
It is way out of control. So interesting thing. Applewhite and his followers call themselves Heaven's Gate Away Team.
Right.
And we're wearing black uniforms and patches like our space shuttle patches the day they died.
Right.
Or committed suicide.
They went to Marie Callender's too on their last meal.
Did you hear about the meal?
Yeah.
It's better than I eat, man. Come on.
They all went to Marie Callender's the last meal, and I think the waiter or the host was on videotape explaining to everybody. They had blueberry cheesecake, turkey.
They all had
clubs.
The same exact thing,
as they always did. He said, "Yeah,
and predetermined for them and prepaid."
Right. Well, that's the other thing that these people, like you mentioned to me when we were discussing this topic, these cults, they basically program everything for you.
Right.
They pretty much schedule what you do, what you eat, who you talk to, if you know you don't have sex, yada yada yada. And they all vary, but it's almost like a program that is set forth for the followers to they don't have to think for themselves.
That's right. That's right. It's all predetermined. It's all thought out.
Which would suck for me because, no, seriously, because I would never, that's why I would never be able to be taken into one of these cults. Because right. you can't tell me I can't have a double, medium rare. You know?
Right. Or have relations with your wife, that, even.
The wife, that's another story.
But
no,
all of this control was done.
Yeah, it's crazy. Know? It's
so,
crazy.
So his followers were so devout. Applewhite's followers, that they were excited and always looking forward to the time when Doe or Applewhite would say that the apocalypse was upon them. So they were always looking forward to that. And his followers actually made videotapes, very disturbing videotapes of them, expressing their happiness for him, eventually leaving this earth. And that's basically Applewhite telling them it's time to commit suicide.
Yeah.
So it's a horrible, obviously a horrible event and a moment in their lives, but they are blinded by this man's, information.
This particular cult, does not seem as creepy as a lot of them, even though they're weird. You know what I mean?
Okay.
Because on one level, and I think he explained it, or some, one of his old followers explained it, that, maybe that was Jim Jones, but they were explaining that, you have the right to take your own life, and you have the right to determine when you should go. It's not a crazy thing. I mean, what's crazy is the idea that you are getting on some ship to leave your body to go to a higher form. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Because, euthanasia is something that is practiced in many, many cultures.
Correct.
But maybe not on a large scale like that.
And for various reasons.
And for various reasons. The other thing is, they lived in an amazing compound. What was it called? Mount Carmel or something?
Well, no, that was Koresh. We'll get to Koresh.
Okay.
But so Applewhite gained control over his followers by strict classes, by a strict way of living,
yoga,
thought control. He was very particular in how they prepared food,
right?
Things like that.
Yoga, macrame classes,
right.
Stuff like that that you would probably need in the afterlife.
He taught his followers of having no human needs, no possessions, no emotions, and no individualism. So he felt this would elevate them to be prepared to enter the kingdom level above human. And entering this kingdom level, of course, means to kill yourself when Doe or Applewhite tells you to. So one more clip from Mr. Applewhite. Let's check him out.
We have a website now. It's the popular thing. Everybody has to have a website. We have a website on the internet called Heaven's Gate. Heaven's Gate, of course, .com. Everything is .com. We're not .org, we're .com. So if you want to learn more about who we are, what we have to say, what I have to say, what my older member can share with you through what we have said and know of our history, we have nothing to hide. Even though to you we are a dangerous cult, we understand that. Why dangerous? Because we threaten the family. We threaten the established norm of family values.
So there, they even acknowledge themselves as a cult and potentially dangerous to the norm of the way people think. Yeah,
they're all aware of the fact that people think of them as kooks and cults and all this other stuff.
Right. So
they don't deny it.
So finishing up with Applewhite, so we can get to the next. An interesting thing, Applewhite's followers was that in teaching them about reaching this level above human, he told them there would be a day he asked them to rejoin the Creator. So they knew that this day was coming in all of the lessons and things that he taught them. So his followers knew all along it was a doomsday cult. So they were aware of that information. If you could say one decent thing about Applewhite, in my opinion, although he was extremely strange, I think he was a weird guy, but he was honest to his followers and that honest in the fact that they would one day take their own lives. So he wasn't the coward in a way that the media makes him out to be. Applewhite truly believed what he was doing and what he was saying.
The website is still up, so if anybody wants to look it up, heavensgate.com.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
They might be another vessel for people to escape planet Earth and recycle this particular phase of human development, although the last one may have already left, right? Because it was December 21st.
What, the alignments?
Well, the last ship to the higher form may have left on the 21st.
That's
so you may have
point.
To wait for the next one 1,000 years from now. But check out heavensgate.com.
Check it out. You never know. Get some information.
It's a trip.
That takes us to Mr. Jim Jones. Now, this is a very disturbing story here. Oof. And we do have some tape from Mr. Jones, which is the famous death recording, the death tape that he made at the end of the last 48 minutes of people's lives. Of course, we can't play the whole thing, but we do have some pieces of it. And I do warn you, that is quite,
very disturbing,
staggering information. Yeah. So let's get started. So James Warren, or Jim Jones, was a founder of the leader of the People's Temple, best known for a mass suicide in 1978 of 914 of its members in Jonestown, Guyana, and a murder of five individuals at a nearby airstrip, including a U.S. Congressman, Leo Ryan. Over 200 children were murdered at Jonestown, almost all of them by cyanide poisoning. Mm. The suicides were carried out by drinking a mixture of grape, Kool-Aid, and cyanide. This is where the term "drink the Kool-Aid."
Don't drink the Kool-Aid, yo!
Right, so Jones was noted for that. So who was Jim Jones? He was a small-town preacher who in the 50s led an integrated church in Indiana. The People's Temple was way ahead of its time as far as race relations or public sentiment towards racial integration. Mm. So he actually was breaking a lot of ground, as far as, helping the masses get along in that area. So Jones was hated by whites at the time, but beloved by black churchgoers that looked to him for their weekly Sunday services.
Right, right.
So he built a large black congregation.
Right.
Jones soon outgrew Indianapolis and the racial hatred they encountered and moved his group west to San Francisco.
Of course.
So in San Francisco, he was accepted by a much more liberal point of view. As Jones's congregation grew, so did his celebrity as he gained access to politicians and media interests. So he kind of blew up. You know, he got big time, lots of followers. Although being a community force in San Francisco, which they were, if you needed a protest or you needed somebody at your rally,
he provided
services
for primarily African Americans that everyone had turned their backs on.
You're right.
You know what I'm saying?
That's true.
So I mean he was
commended for that by the city.
He was
absolutely.
He provided meals, clothing,
right.
Places to stay, live, whatever. I mean,
right.
he started, as a do-gooder.
We don't know what his motives were.
Well, yeah,
but you're right. Yeah. He did have better operations in the beginning,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
or better movements. So, mm-hmm. So he was a community force in San Francisco. The people who worked for the People's Temple on the inside. Suffered from all the same tactics that a lot of these cults suffer from, which is sleep deprivation, mm-hmm. Being overworked, and the lack of the ability to make their own choices and or alleged sexual proclivities. So
right.
A lot of these had a lot of strange, a lot of these cults did have a lot of strange sexual requests, alleged, But, very interesting information.
The sleep deprivation is always a good one for mind control.
Right.
Yeah.
They're going to control you because when you're exhausted, how coherent are you to following instructions?
Whatever. Whatever the fuck you want to do, don't worry about it. I just want to go to bed.
Right. So his group, as the People's Temple grew, he had to control this grip. So his grip tightened.
Mm.
His followers at times were not permitted to leave or contact their families, potentially suffering from various thought reforming activities. It was at this time when a group of eight of his followers defected from the temple. This gang of eight, as they were known, made public many things inside the temple via a letter that they sent to the press.
Mm.
This depressed and angered Jones and caused his first invoking of the term revolutionary suicide.
Mm. Mm.
Yeah, that was the first time that he brought to life.
This was in San Francisco.
This was correct. This was prior to going to Guyana.
Mm.
Jones decided not to bow to the public scrutiny, and he fled to, but that's when he made his move to Guyana, South America, where he and his followers set up what was called Jonestown.
Right.
This was an ideal, perfect community, something like a commune, cooperation, harmony and balance. It was supposed to
like
be that.
Like near Nirvana.
Right, but it certainly didn't end up like that.
Yeah.
So within months, the numbers in Jonestown grew, so it was a hit. So it was a big success, and the People's Temple grew as a result of Jonestown.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was in the thousands.
I think they were selling timeshares. I almost bought a condo there until I saw the batches of Kool-Aid. I said, "Nah, it's all right."
Right. they would allow Jones to dictate every single moment of their lives as members' numbers grew. Food supplies started to begin to run short. So as more people got there, the food was was less abundant and started to make people very, very uneasy.
Right, but who needed food anyway?
Well, you had to eat. But, you know, they were all, part of this whole communal existence.
But that's another thing. Sleep deprivation, undernourished.
Right.
You know?
Oh, there you go. Yeah. So members started to notice an increased presence of armed guards as well.
Mm-hmm.
So they noticed something was up, and they noticed a distinct change in Jones's demeanor. He seemed to be under the influence of an unknown drug.
Right.
And he blamed that on the nurse giving him the incorrect amount of medication.
Right.
It led to paranoia and discontent among many of the members. This led to a certain members' families getting word of the condition in Jonestown and pressing the government for an investigation. So that's where the pressure came
from.
Then U.S. Congressman from San Francisco, Leo Ryan, agreed to fly to Guyana to meet with Jones and inspect the conditions of Jonestown. Which was a fatal mistake. He did this with only a small group of reporters and assistants.
Yeah.
Upon Congressman Ryan's arrival in Guyana, Jim Jones planned to kill him. They wanted to kill him right off, but decided not to and go ahead and let the visit commence. Congressman Ryan was given a special dinner and reception from the followers. It was a concert. You can watch that.
Right.
During this reception, a few members slipped Ryan and his entourage notes explaining that they are being held captive and wanted to go home.
Right.
So the following day, it was brought to Mr. Jones's attention that the temple members were actually unhappy with their conditions and wished to leave. Jones became enraged and by what he called the betrayal of the so-called white members of the temple.
Members are the ones that left.
The white members were the ones that decided to leave on the day Leo Ryan was there.
Mm-hmm.
So Congressman Ryan then tried to further investigate Jonestown, so he kind of tried to dig deeper and was attacked from behind by a man with a knife. The attacking man was subdued while Congressman Ryan escaped on a dump truck and made his way with his entourage and the released followers, of course, to an airstrip.
Mm-hmm.
And the released followers boarded a plane and taxied the runway. There were two planes.
Right.
So the followers get on one, and one of the followers had it all planned, and they started shooting inside of the plane, they subdued that guy. No deaths in that plane. That made it to Georgetown, you know, the capital. But Congressman Ryan was still on the
tarmac. That was the plane.
The first plane made it out.
Right.
But there was a shooting on board that plane because the temple's member was on it.
Right.
So they got him. They got control of him.
That plane was able to go.
Right. And Congressman Ryan's entourage was still waiting to board the second plane when a dump truck pulled up on the runway and opened fire, killing five, including Congressman Ryan.
There's a documentary you can watch all this stuff on. It's pretty interesting.
Right. Well, definitely. As word got back to the temple, Jones began his sermon of revolutionary suicide. So this is when it all started.
Right.
So after the congressman was killed, Jones informed his followers that he had planned to kill the congressman and his entourage. So let's see if we can hear Jim Jones in his own words from the death recording.
Mm-hmm. What's going to happen here in a matter of a few minutes is that one of those people on that plane is going to shoot the pilot. I know that. I didn't plan it, but I know it's going to happen. They're going to shoot that pilot, and down comes that plane into the jungle. And we had better not have any of our children left when it's over, because they'll parachute in here on us. I'm telling you just as plain as I know how to tell you, I've never lied to you. I never have lied to you.
So, you know, he's just telling them, we've just done something, you know, drastic, and your life's about to change.
That's part of his master plan. I mean, it appears as if he was allowing these people to come so that he can kill them, knowing that the U.S. government at that point is going to get involved.
It was all manipulated,
and all his followers will therefore get either arrested, killed, or whatever. So you should kill yourself now.
It was all manipulation this point.
Yep.
So he instilled the fear that they would be invaded, tortured, and their babies would be tortured when the Guyanese army arrived. He then pleaded with them that the time was now for revolutionary suicide and for them to all take their lives that he, of course, had given them. Only one follower decided to rationalize with him. In the end, she was shouted down and drank the poison anyway.
Right.
So this person actually dies.
Her name was Charlene?
No, here is Christine.
Christine.
In her own words, just before committing suicide.
I look at our babies and I think they deserve to live.
I agree.
You know?
But also they deserve, what's more, they deserve peace.
We all came here for peace.
And have we had it?
No.
I tried to give it to you. I've laid down my life practically. I've practically died every day to give you peace. And you still not had any peace. You look better than I've seen you in a long while. But it's still not the kind of peace that I wanted to give you.
So you can hear his voice slurring from the drugs.
But he turns it around. He said, I've given you the peace.
Right. Well, the
you
life look, he gave him.
Right,
sure,
right, right. You, sure. You look better than you have in a long time.
Right.
And you still don't have peace. So he's amazing, this guy.
He's a sick man. So yeah. Nobody seems to agree with Christine. She goes on to say that she would prefer to move forward instead of going to sleep. So let's hear Christine one more time.
When we destroy ourselves, we're defeated. We let them, the enemy, defeat us.
Did you see I live to fight no more forever?
Yes, I saw that.
Did you not have some sense of pride and victory in that man? He would not subject himself to the will and whim of people who tell that they're going to come in whenever they please and push into our house, come when they please, take who they want to, talk to who they want to. Isn't that living? That's not living to me. That's not freedom. That's not the kind of freedom I sought.
So, you know, it's amazing. She says that she would rather, you know, move forward than to perish, and everybody in the group disagreed. So it was quite a sad,
there's a few
sad
people
moment.
That come up and talk after her.
Nobody wants out. They no. all want to agree.
What? Yeah, after her, no one disagrees with them.
No.
Got it.
No. So let's listen to one more of the followers. Listen to the devotion of this follower after being requested to kill themselves. Check this out.
If you tell us we have to give our lives now, we're ready. I'm pretty sure all the rest of the sisters and brothers are with me.
For months I've tried to keep this thing from happening, but I now see it's the will of sovereign being that this happened to us. That we lay down our lives in protest against what's being done. That we lay down our lives to protest in what's being done. The criminality of people, the cruelty of people, who walked out of here today? Did you notice who walked out? Mostly white people. Mostly white people walked. I'm so grateful for the ones that didn't, those who knew who they are.
He goes on to demand the children go first,
right.
And even scolds the parents for allowing themselves to become emotional while their children
are right, 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 right. To scaring the children.
Oh, yeah. He announces the death of the congressman and demands the medication and to hurry up before the GDF, you know, the army, gets there. So let's listen to Jim Jones.
Red Brigade showed them justice. The congressman's dead. Please get us some medication. It's simple. It's simple. There's no convulsions with it. It's just simple. Just please get it. Before it's too late, the GDF will be here. I tell you, get moving. Get moving. Get moving. Don't be afraid to die. If these people land out here, they'll torture some of our children here. They'll torture our people. They'll torture our seniors. We cannot have this.
It's one of the chilliest things you can listen to, yeah. To imagine what's happening. So the crowd goes from worshiping to negotiating to enthusiastically agreeing to commit suicide. You can hear an assistant telling the members where to line up and not to worry that it is not a bad thing to do. This one's really disturbing.
You got to move. Are you going to get the medication here? You got to move.
Marshall, there's about 40 minutes.
You have to move, and the people that are standing there in the aisle, go stay in the radio room yard. But everybody get behind the table and back this way, okay? There's nothing to worry about. Everybody keep calm and try and keep your children calm. And the older children can help love the little children and reassure them. They aren't crying from pain. It's just a little bitter tasting, but they're not crying out of any pain.
Wow. Think about that.
They're not crying from pain. How about they're crying from fear that people are just dying around them?
Right.
And this dude is talking about death,
right.
And that they're going to come and torture them. I mean, kids are innocent, man.
Oh,
they sense.
They were watching their friends die
in front
of them.
Yeah,
it was
adults,
a lie.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
And the children had to go first.
Unbelievable.
Because that would force the mind control of the parents into wanting to die as well.
Unbelievable.
You hear the babies dying, you hear crying.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You hear less and less people.
Yeah.
Until you hear Jones just, he kind of hear him coughing and then silence.
Then silence.
The tape goes silent.
Yeah.
It's the weirdest
thing. For like 8 minutes. That was the weirdest thing.
With some bizarre music in the background.
Yeah, that is bizarre.
Horrible. 914 people lay dead, 919 in all. Let me just play one more click of Jones just to show how sick this guy is.
Shoot.
Let's try to slip this one in. Here we go.
children. It's just something to put you to rest.
Oh, God.
Mother, 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 please. Mother, please, 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 don't do this, don't do this. Sit down your life with your child, but don't do this.
Doing the best for you.
Free at last. Please, keep your emotions down, keep your emotions down.
So you hear he says, keep, you know, when he says peace at last, that's a baby taking the drink.
Yep.
Unbelievable.
And babies are crying and screaming in the background throughout the whole thing.
It is horrific.
Yeah, yeah.
And the important thing and why we're doing this is I just want you to listen to the type of control that has been perpetrated.
And devotion.
Oh, it's unbelievable.
You understand all these people have... most of these people who submit to these cults, obviously, they're not crazy. Hopelessness is the common denominator.
Could be.
Hopelessness. Very, yeah, sure. Especially these religious cults.
Right.
They're all looking for some sort of help and hope. You know, if you listen to this this clip, a lot of the African American women, they'll go up and they're talking about no one was there for us,
right,
except you, Father. They call him Father.
Yes.
No.
Yes,
when no one was there for us, you were there.
Right.
They a few of them get up and they give their testimony.
Right.
And this refers to, I believe, the San Francisco movement where he was feeding, housing, and
right,
clothing.
Do you think he was targeting certain groups of people because they might be more susceptible?
Yeah, of course. He's targeting people who are more vulnerable, I'm assuming, you know?
Right. Very interesting. Well, that leads us to, we got to keep moving. That leads us to the Branch Davidians and Mr. David Koresh.
Mm.
This is a different situation where the first two were controlled by, or were their deaths were either created by themselves or by their leader in the Jim Jones situation.
And also, their goal was death. I mean, it was open, no?
Right. Well, you know, in Applewhite's case, they knew they were a doomsday cult. They knew that was coming.
Mm-hmm. And this guy must have been preaching to them about, you know, freeing themselves prior to the congressman being killed, no?
I don't know for sure, but I know that they were tested in the past of actually drinking some poison that
Got
wasn't
it.
Poison.
Got it.
So they had gone
to be
that.
Ready.
Right.
And just in case.
Unbelievable.
Got it.
So David Koresh was the leader of the Branch Davidians religious sect, believing himself to be its rightful leader. So he didn't create them, but he did go there and become the leader. A 1993 raid by the U.S. Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms and the subsequent siege by the FBI ended with the CS gassing and burning of the Branch Davidian Ranch outside of Waco, Texas. Koresh, 54 other adults, and 28 children were found dead after the fire, which is horrible. David Koresh was a musician, writer, and Bible scholar who felt he was the born leader of the Branch Davidian. So people misconceive that or... they don't understand that he didn't go there. This wasn't his own creation. It was an offshoot
of the Seventh-day Adventists, right?
I believe it was a Latter-day Saint.
Latter-day Saint, something like that.
Right. Now, the religious, this religious cult or group was not killed by suicide, and they weren't a doomsday cult. So that does make them unique on our list here. When you look deeper into the raid on Mount Carmel, that's where they were.
Right, right.
It seemed to be a peaceful community of worshipers that felt victim to the overreach of the federal government.
Right.
So at the end of their
right.
whole trauma,
but,
they felt the government had actually done
but
them
what
wrong.
Was the one thing that tipped the government off for the government to come in
right.
and say, you guys are in some right. violation of the law?
In 1992, the ATF accused David Koresh of possessing illegal firearms.
What's an illegal firearm?
Like heavy machine guns, like, you know, assault rifles.
Like army-issued
right.
type stuff?
Something.
And
I would
know. To have in Texas? Seems to me in Texas.
There are laws. Right.
You're born with one of those.
Well, there has to be a certain classification of weapon, you
Got
know,
it.
That's above
Got
know,
it.
Commercial grade.
Got
so
it.
Maybe that's what they were accusing.
Got it.
I don't have those details. But
right.
based on a report that actually neighbors overheard gunfire, rapid gunfire, that was their evidence that caused that warrant. That caused the whole incident was overheard.
Oh, the
rapid
overhearing
machine
of
gun
rapid.
Fire.
Oh, right. Got it.
So on February 28, 1993, at 9:40, the ATF raided Mount Carmel as a result of that investigation.
Right.
Now imagine Koresh. He had 100 or so followers, all living at the Mount Carmel complex at the time. They were allegedly going about their day with around 40 children. So
uh-huh,
that was like
uh-huh,
40 or so.
Uh-huh.
Koresh met the officers at the door. So right. when the ATF walked up, he met them at the door, which was the moment of conjecture. So this is the moment yep. where everyone argues whether Koresh shot first or whether the agents shot first.
Right.
But this is when Koresh states the ATF just started shooting into the house.
Right.
Koresh was shot and five Branch Davidians were killed in that initial, right. initial shooting.
He basically comes to the door, yeah. cracks it open a bit, right. shows his, you know, his torso and his face mm-hmm. and sees that there's, you know, what, like 60, 70 armed. ATF armed.
Right. Super armed military
yeah, yeah,
style.
Yeah, yeah, with Kevlar body gear right. and all this other stuff.
Mm-hmm. The Branch Davidians, and they admitted to having guns, but not, you know, initially firing on any of the ATF officers. When Koresh met the officers at the door, Koresh said they shot him first. Then the ATF continued their assault on the compound. They attempted to enter a second floor window.
Right.
They entered the building and they were either met with gunfire or were hit by their own gunfire.
Right.
As the Davidian survivor states. So that's right. also conjecture.
Right.
40 ATF officers were killed in that initial gunfight.
There's a video. There's actual footage of this. You could actually see the opening of the door, David right. Koresh showing his face, the ATF agent climbing the roof. Right. trying to get into the window and some shots are being exchanged. It's hard to tell where they're coming from.
Right. Interesting. You know, it's horrible that we have this on tape and that it was so modern that you can see all of this occurring, yet we can do absolutely nothing about it, or the Davidians can do nothing about it
yeah.
in hindsight. So ATF, they retreated. So after they got shot in the window, they kind of climbed back down.
Right, this one dude.
And they retreated. And that started a 51-day standoff
right.
Between Koresh, the ATF, the FBI, and good old Janet Reno. You remember
right.
her?
She was I met Janet Reno.
Wow. Yeah. Was it around this time period?
Yes, this was what, 96?
I think she's a criminal. This was 93. But
93. I had met her probably, yeah, around 93, actually. I met her.
Well, she was hot on the trail of Mr. Koresh.
Yeah.
So the standoff was televised, and only a handful of people left the compound during the standoff.
Right.
A wounded Koresh and his followers were seen on a videotape pleading with federal officials to let them leave safely.
Right.
So a lot of the videotapes you see on YouTube or on the internet.
Telephone conversation right. with the ATF and the Koresh, the Branch Davidians, the mediator,
right.
who was in between trying to bargain some sort of mutually consensual thing.
Right.
Yeah, it was convoluted.
And they were swearing their innocence through the whole thing. I mean, they certainly yeah. weren't. And you know what the interesting thing about Koresh was that he wasn't kind of out of it. He wasn't out of it. Like Applewhite or Jones.
No. Just
this guy was lucid.
He's present.
So FBI negotiators went back and forth with the Davidians for 50 days on how and when they would leave, but an agreement was never struck.
Right.
Koresh possibly believed that this was the Book of Revelations coming to fruition. This was one of the government's theories.
Sure.
But his lucidity on the videotapes does not really support that. So that, you know, when you look at how clear he was, it doesn't make sense that the man was cracking or out of his mind at those
right,
moments.
Right,
he
right.
just thought maybe it was going to stop and his followers would either die or mm-hmm. go to jail.
Well, I mean,
die from a gunshot or, you know, they did assume that yeah. since they had already been attacked.
Basically, man, you're at home, you have weapons. For all intents and purposes, you have the right to bear arms.
Right.
The ATF comes into your door. There's about 50, 60, you know, heavily suited and armed, you know, government officials outside, and they start shooting. All of a sudden, you right. guys have guns. You're like, what the fuck is going on
right,
here?
Right.
And all this non-communicative, you know, supposed, you know, battle, you know, ensues.
Yeah.
They're trying to kill us. They're trying to kill us, except the government is the one that has the power at this point.
Right. Right.
You know, they're the accusers.
Mm-hmm. So they did various things through the 50 days. Mm-hmm. They did the noise tortures and the lights and mm-hmm. they cut the electricity, all that mm-hmm. stuff, the water.
They should have played loud salsa music, like really loud bachata and cumbia.
That's not
bad. No, that's not bad, but just really loud to like white people, drives them crazy.
Oh,
yeah.
No. Yeah. Well, you should have emailed your friend Janet Reno.
Well, that's what we do in New York. We just like, if somebody, you want somebody out of the building, you just have a party above them at 4 a.m.
All right.
They leave.
Very cool. 50 days of the standoff, Janet Reno had enough. The FBI had enough, and they planned to drive the Davidians out of the compound, dousing it with CS gas or tear gas.
Mm.
But the gas in large doses as which it would be administered through these tanks was definitely fatal to children or the elderly
in the
compound. Yeah. So the CS gas was pumped into the compound using tanks equipped with aerosol nozzles, you know, maniacs. Not long after the compound was filled with gas, so they literally filled the rooms with this gas.
I mean, they were also informed that there were children in there.
They saw the video tips.
But in the early stages of those 51 days, the guy who was communicating with the go-between, they knew there were children there.
Oh, sure.
Some woman was shot while she was breastfeeding. I mean, just crazy stuff like this.
Right. And so not
unarmed.
Right. And then not long after it was pumped full of gas, it erupted into the flames we all saw on television.
Right.
One horrific part is that only one person emerges from the flames, once it starts on fire and is taken into custody. The fire resulted in the death of 76 men, women, and children, including David Koresh, 82 deaths in all, including the ATF agents. So it's terrible. So everybody died.
Could have been avoided.
The government alleges Koresh, believing this was the apocalypse, started the fire and either forced the others not to leave or had committed some sort of suicide pact with the rest of the followers. This is merely speculation. The Davidian survivors state that the events that arose from the initial siege, that was not their doing, that they didn't initially make the shooting, they didn't shoot through the door, they didn't shoot the guy through the window,
right,
and so on. So the survivors, even after losing their loved ones, stood by Koresh, and a lot of the survivors still do to this day.
Sure.
That they're of their innocence. And the
sure,
fact that
sure,
innocent.
Sure.
But the Davidian survivors also reported to being shot by snipers from the helicopters during the siege. An interesting thing, when investigators or many questions came out of this, and there was congressional hearings that amounted to nothing, congressional hearings really don't amount to anything. But when investigators looked deeply into why and how the siege on Waco happened, and if the government may be responsible, they used what's called special FLIR, F-L-I-R, footage from the helicopters that they were flying around, and they analyzed it. The FLIR footage shows heat signatures instead of actual people on the film. And these tapes were analyzed to show possible federal agents shooting into the compound from the rear, not letting anybody escape.
Huh.
So this was at the time when the local media was being kept miles away, and this was during the fire. The Davidians were assumed to be fleeing the rear of the compound and were being shot at.
Uh-huh.
So since no Davidians survived from running out of the fire, we have to assume that if they were running out, something stopped them.
Right.
So whether or not Koresh was dealing weapons in any of that, or was crazy or thought he was God, is secondary to the outcome of the events there in Mount Carmel. So this is a totally different than the first two. In this case, we have the same type of messianic personality, right? So they all want to be leaders of religious sects or religious groups.
He was kicked out of the whatever the church was, the Latter-day Saints or whatever, in one instance for coming to some sort of a conclusion that God wanted him to marry the preacher's daughter. So he was an outcast of sorts from the original faction of that church where the Branch Davidians came out of.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
I do have one clip of Mr. Koresh just so we can hear his voice. This is part of the tape when he was in the compound. I'll just go ahead and quickly play it. This is Mr. David Koresh.
You know, it's not against law to buy a firearm. It's not against law to buy anything that they sell at a gun show. And when this is all resolved, yellow sheet is legal. The accusation is not. And bringing these tanks and stuff around here, I tell you what, being an American first, I'm the kind of guy that I'll stand in front of a tank, you can run over me, but I'll be biting one of the tracks. No one's going to hurt me or my family. That's American policy here.
So there you go. So he's telling them, and he's not saying in a religious vein. He's saying in a political,
constitutional
vein.
Right. Way.
In a human
vein. I'm an American.
The way I might say it.
Right.
So I had a lot of connection
to that
message itself.
Well, the way you might say it,
itself.
Because if the ATF came to my house, I'd be like, yo. I'd come out with my underwear, my hands up. I'd be like, yo.
You're going.
Yo, whatever you guys need,
whatever
I'll
you got
the
on
butt
me.
Cheeks, whatever.
All right. So in the end, when you think about it, the devotion and the commonality in all three was certainly the inability to disassociate themselves from the cult in the end when it was time to die. They all made the decision to, stay and to perish. So,
well, the Branch Davidians really didn't have a choice. I mean, by the time they got to that point,
they had a choice to leave. I believe Koresh would have certainly let them leave. At a certain point, the FBI says, no, you cannot leave anymore, and we are not going to allow you to leave.
If you do leave, we will
force you back into the compound.
But
that was before they, but they would have certainly accepted people out, but they decided they were going to stay with Mr. Koresh.
Yeah. Well, I don't think they were given, you know, complete amnesty, which is the guy said,
right.
But
what would happen to them once they got out? Sure.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Who knows? They were afraid they were going to get shot.
Well, that was the main fear at that point.
And that was what the negotiations were, to make sure they came out safe.
And then close to the 51 days, they said, sorry, the boss has said now it's too late. We're not going to let anybody out.
Right. So how does one gain this sort of control over human minds? And how are we all victims of thought reform and re-education in some sense of the word? Take, for instance, the events of 9/11. As a result, we have experienced a new norm in our world. And as the result, we have experiencing this new norm, we've learned to deal with it and tolerate it. And that would be the re-education portion of all of this mind control. So we do experience thought reform and re-education in mainstream society on a daily basis. And that you can look at something like 9/11 and say, hey, they have created a new norm. And yes, I do tolerate the X-rays. And one of the new norms is that I
have to buy bottled water. I can no longer bring my own, bottled water. That's one thing.
Right.
You know.
Well, you got to buy it. I mean, you have to buy the bottled water. You can't take bottled water onto an airplane.
That's correct. You can't. Wow. You cannot bring any liquids through the TSA. I mean, that's just one of many things, and I have my own opinions on that. That's when we revisit 9/11, we'll get into all that stuff.
Well, do you think that do you think a certain type of people are more susceptible? Your final thoughts in wrapping up. We got a couple
are more susceptible
left.
To
what type of people do you think hopeless, is more susceptible
hopeless
to
people, hopeless people. Yeah, I think
just hopeless.
Hopeless. I have no hope. Somebody comes along and says, Hitler, for instance, we are better than this. We are better than this. We need to stick together. So a little charisma, a little hope. And then you have some people who are hopeless and who are lost.
Right.
They're easier to follow somebody that can give them some sort of a pathway to that.
And I wish it only limited itself to hopeless people, but I have a feeling that it can occur across any level of society.
Sure.
And when you look at the videotapes or the information, none of these people seemed hopeless, once they were in the cult and in that mindset.
No. They have been given, bucketfuls of hope. So that's why they're in there and they seem happy and they're like, no, this is great.
Right. Well, thank you for joining me, man, today on The Cult. I'm glad you're back, man.
Yeah, man.
We went through some important stuff today.
Crazy stuff. Hippie.
But learning about cults, it kind of gives us a basis of what can be done to our minds and how much control can actually be done to a human being that would actually drive them, to kill themselves. So thank you for listening to the show today. For Wyme Russell and Nestor Rodriguez.
Yay.
And thank you for listening to the Devil of the Details radio show here on SkidRowStudios.com. I'd like to thank Jeremy Hansen and Sonia Hernandez for her awesome work on the board today. The show sounded great. Nestor, I'm glad you're back, man. It was tough doing them shows by myself, man.
We had
Sal in here. It was crazy.
Oh, it was tough doing them like via my cell phone and like stealing wireless signals on my laptop on the streets in New York.
You did good, though, man. We did good.
Yeah, we did.
The shows were good, and we got some good ones coming up. Next week, we'll connect to the cults. Next week, we are covering the Oklahoma City bombing, and that was done essentially as the result of
Waco.
So we'll see you next week.